I'm blessed to live long enough and live in Poland because I could encounter our Pope John Paul II. In Poland, I met him several times as I was a student, a seminarian in Krakow, and he was at that time a cardinal. He was in charge and everybody was seeing him. He had special celebrations, and he was always walking in black cassock. When you saw him, he couldn't say that he was a cardinal. But of course, he dressed as cardinal for special celebrations and official ceremonies. And he was coming to our seminary once a year on the Easter Monday. So it was our privilege to have him in our home. And I remember we were lying up, you know, just in the corridor, and one of the seminarians had a newspaper, and the cardinal was passing by, and I look at the seminarian who had the newspaper. He said, "Well, it's good to read the newspaper. Sometimes it tells the truth." He had always that wit and sense of humor, and he didn't speak long, you know, just he has always some kind of remarks, but very, very quick. He was not my prof, but I heard him several times when he preached. In 1976, I was already in Canada, and he came with about 20 bishops to Eucharistic Congress in Philadelphia, and he stopped in Hamilton. And I had the opportunity to be in his presence. And a year after, I was in Poland, and Cardinal Karol Wojtyła had the special celebration. And again, I was with other priests in the line, and there were two of us who were in Canada at that time when he met us. And he was just passing by, he looked at us, he said, Canadians. That's incredible, you know, just how great his memory was, and photographic memory. And it was a year after, I was with my friend going from Rome to Poland, and we stopped at Vienna at the airport. And he was there with Cardinal Dziwisz, with his secretary. And again, he just looked at us, you know, and recognized us. We just... He didn't speak much, you know, just welcome or something like that, and it's good to see you. My two greatest encounters with John Paul II were in 82 and 2000. I have two photographs on the side. One is 82, and the other, the small one, is 2000. In the year 82, I went with a Canadian-Polish Boys and Girl Guides to International Jamboree. It was what was in Belgium. And then we went for special audience to Castel Gandolfo. Castel Gandolfo is his summer residence, about 1 hour or less from Rome. And he spent 2 hours with us. It was at night time. He loved singing. He was telling the different stories from his life. He wanted to hear what others were going to say to him. And he was very, very accessible, very friendly. year 2000, it was 25th anniversary of my priesthood. And my desire was to have the Mass with him in his chapel. And it was just waiting time. You know, I made the petition, and for me it was just to wait for the phone call. And day before, December the 8th, was phone call came and said, yes, tomorrow morning we can come for the Mass with the Pope. It was a special feast, you know, December the 8th, Immaculate Conception of Mary. And right in the morning, we had to go there, and we have to get passports. Well, it's a different country, so they didn't allow you to go without passport in. And I went to the chapel first, and I saw the Pope kneeling right in the middle of the chapel on his kneeler. So he didn't move at all. It was like a rock, deeply praying and not moving at all. When the Mass came, when the family came for the Mass, he got up. It was like, I don't know, he got in his mind the clock was, I don't know. But the time came, he got up, you know, and he celebrated the Mass with them. And I was privileged to celebrate Mass with him. At the same time, I was an altar server to him. So during the offertory, he was sitting at the chair, and he was holding his arms like this. So you know, when you have, you know, that small bowl with cruets and water, and to pour the water, when you see the priest has, you know, washing of the feet of the fingers. So he was holding like this. Like, I was consternated. What to do now? The bowl was big like this. So I put the bowl under one hand and then the other hand and pouring all the water. I didn't realize at that time that this was his illness. He couldn't hold his hands together. Yeah. And during the sign of peace, I didn't know whether to approach him or not. He turned to me and he put, you know, his hands on my shoulders. So he was very, very human. Not that he was the Pope, but at the same time he was very accessible. And after the Mass, you know, we prayed. It was everything in silence. The picture was not allowed to be taken. But at the end, his photographer took some pictures, and this is one picture of with him. And he gave me the rosary at that time, so I keep this as a relic now. Second class relic, yes. I've been several times in his presence when he had pilgrimages. I've been twice in Poland when he was there, at World Youth Day in Toronto. I met him in Rome also several times in general audience, but I didn't have that close encounter as those two times, which I treasure very much. I would like to tell you my experience when he came to Poland in 1979. It was the first pilgrimage of John Paul II to his native country. He came in June, from June 2nd to June 10th. It was nine days a visit. And he wanted to come for May the 8th. May the 8th is the special feast. It's a feast commemorating killing of martyrdom of Saint Stanislaus. Saint Stanislaus is one of the main patrons of Poland, and he was killed by a king. So it was very significant feast, and also was political. So the communists didn't want him to come for that celebration. So they have deliberation, okay, and have another time. And in May he's supposed to come for 2 days. So they agreed again to come for him to come in January, in June, and he came for 9 days. And what happened at that time, that there were thousands of people gathering, you know, being in communist country. So it was incredible to see multitudes of people. In Krakow there were over 2 million people. In Warsaw about 1 million people. And on TV they were showing only the altar and only Pope walking or standing and showing some empty spaces. They didn't show anything with millions of people or thousands of people. It was incredible. One was watching TV. I said, there are no people there? But this was the procedure of communists at that time. Don't show to people that there are millions with him. I went to several places. And at that time it was no problem. I didn't have to have a ticket to go. It was enough to have the cassock, and I could go very close to him. In one place I was about 3 meters from him. And there were no official delegations like now you have. They sit, you know, they take first places. The priests were able to come very close to him. It changed after, you know, but at that time that was the first time in the pilgrimage in Poland. So it was, the whole country was in jubilant ecstasy. The streets were free, you know, they see themselves as free people. And what happened that John Paul II gave Polish people back their identity being Catholics, that they are children of God, gave back them Poland country, that this is, you are the citizens of Poland. Poland is yours. You're not slaves. He gave them the culture back. And this was incredible. And this was the beginning of that movement in Eastern Europe. Many say that was the Berlin Wall, it was the beginning. No, it was the effect of what happened in Poland in 1979. In Warsaw, it was the Pentecost Sunday, and the Pope spoke, and he prayed to the Holy Spirit, "Come, Holy Spirit. Come, Holy Spirit, and renew the face of the earth, this earth." And this was the spark of what happened in Poland and in Europe. And for communism, this was the deadly blow. And they knew about it. They knew this is why they were so afraid when Pope spoke. They couldn't match his power. Like Stalin said about the Pope, how many tanks does he have? No, Pope John Paul II didn't have any tank, but he had a spiritual power. He knew how to speak to people, how to lift them up spiritually, giving them back their identity, who they are, and what are their rights. So we can say that the smallest country in the world, Vatican, challenged the biggest country at the time, Soviet Union, and the small country won. One because of John Paul II, the spiritual power. There are many, many other things what I could say, what I heard and I saw on TV. I remember once in 2001, when he was in Ukraine, it was rain. And during his homily, he started to sing a Polish folk song. Nie lij deszczu, nie lij, bo ci tu nie trzeba. Obejdź lasy, góry, zawróć się do nieba. O rain, stop falling down. We don't need you here. Go to the forest, go to the mountains, turn back to the sky. And this was the miracle for people. The rain stopped. The same happened here in 2002 at World Youth Day. He blessed the clouds and people who were completely soaked were dry up, you know, in 1 hour. So he did a lot of miracles during his life, and we are going to hear more about them. So there are many, many, many events in his life. I heard from his private secretary, Mukrzycki, that he had two. Dziwisz was all the time with him, and then for 9 years was the younger priest, and now he's Archbishop of Lviv in Ukraine. And just a few months ago, we had a meeting with him, and he was telling many stories about John Paul II. So he underlined, you know, his holiness, that he prayed constantly. And he did so much because he prayed so much. And being in his presence at that time when I had the opportunity in year 2000, so I could feel that holiness in his chapel. Being with him was a great privilege and inspiration to be holy. Maybe I finish right now, and if there will be some questions, I will always answer, because there are many, many, many stories about him. Okay?
Father George. I now invite Father Jason to speak, and after he speaks on youth and vocations, we'll have opportunity for questions for both of them.
I have a small handout there. I don't know if there's enough for everyone, though. So Deacon Charles asked if I could speak about youth and vocations, and I wasn't originally thinking that. I found that as I looked at what our Holy Father, Blessed John Paul II, had to say about youth, actually the theme of vocations was very prominent there. He saw that the time of youth was a time that was given to us as a special responsibility in which young people search for the meaning of life and also how they're going to live their life, where they plan for their future. So obviously the question of vocation comes in there very much. 1985, Blessed John Paul II wrote a letter to the youth of the world. And in this letter, he reflects on the period of youth using the story from the Gospel of the rich young man who came to see Jesus and asked him the question, "Master, what must I do to have eternal life?" And so he saw that youth is a time of particular richness, of wealth. Even it may not be physical wealth, but the idea that young people have great potential, they have their future ahead of them, and their main question is, what do I do with this treasure that I have? What do I do with my life? What do I do with my talents? How do I develop them? And how do I do that in order to live my life as fully as possible? And John Paul II really believed that the young people were turning to Christ and even to the church for answers to these questions, and that it was important that young people be able to discover Christ in the church. That often in our kind of modern society, we think of Christ and the church as two separate things. But he really wanted to make sure that young people, in their search for the meaning to the answer to these questions, would search for it in Christ, and particularly in the church. And he, World Youth Days were in a sense a real experience of the church for young people. That for many young people, their only experience of the church was their local parish. And as wonderful as our parishes may be, it can be a very narrow experience of what the church is. And World Youth Day offers for young people an experience of how diverse, how rich the church is, and how vibrant the church is, how young the church is. That for some young people, they may not see many of their peers with them on Sunday. And so an experience like this allows them to know that they are not alone. And also, I think the holiness of Blessed John Paul II, his own life, also witnessed to Christ's presence in the church. That it's hard to dismiss what he had to say when we knew that he was one of the great individuals of our century and one of the great followers of Christ in our day. And so the first answer that Christ gives to the rich young man is to keep the commandments. And so John Paul says that the time of youth is a time where young people form their conscience. And they basically make choices that will decide what type of person they need to be. And the important part of this is learning to overcome selfishness and being able to live our lives in true love, in true freedom, which is a theme that often comes up in the writings of John Paul II, is the idea of gift, that we are created to give of ourselves to others, and we really only find ourselves in making of our lives a gift to others. And so he cautions young people of the world against sort of false notions of freedom, and says that true freedom is only found in the truth and in love and sacrifice. Pope John Paul II reflects very much on the phrase in Mark's Gospel that says about the young man that Christ looked upon him and loved him. And he uses in his letter to youth a very beautiful, there's a very beautiful section where he compares that to the original look of God at the end of the 7 days of creation. And he looked upon all his creation and he saw that it was very good. And he says that Christ looked upon this rich young man and he saw the goodness in this man and what he was seeking for. In the same sense that Christ looks upon the young people and he sees their richness and their potential. He wants to be a friend who walks with them, and he has confidence in them that they can carry out his mission, and that's why he calls them to participate in the life of the church. And certainly Pope Blessed John Paul II himself, in all his addresses to youth, you sense this real confidence in the youth. which I think for young people was something very powerful, in the sense that many times their experience is one of a sort of cynicism or minimalism, in the sense that I do it myself, for griping about the young people today, how they lack responsibility, they lack manners, they lack this, they lack that. Blessed John Paul II's presentation was very different, in the sense that that it was he had confidence in them and in their possibilities to participate in the mission of the church, the mission in the world. And he speaks, I think, particularly about the universal call to holiness, and that while this is something that involves great challenges, great sacrifices, it's not easy, it's something that certainly is possible. And he presented for young people many examples of holiness in the number of individuals that he beatified and canonized, including the fact that he named St. Therese a doctor of the church. And then speaking about, vocations in particular, it starts, certainly Pope John Paul, in his addresses to youth, he does speak specifically about vocations to the priesthood, to religious life, to marriage. But I think primarily where his effect comes from is not so much in the fact that he spoke about these things, but the fact that he speaks about this the universal call to holiness, in the sense that each of us does have a part to play in God's plan of salvation, including young people, and that he invites them to respond generously to this call. In Christi Fidelis Laici, the apostolic exhortation on the role of the laity, he speaks that the laity that the young people are not just an object of evangelization in the church, but that they are also participants in the evangelization, the mission of evangelization to the world. I guess the last thing too is, of course, in Pope John Paul II's priesthood, in his work as a university professor, he did spend a lot of time with young people and reflected on the meaning of marriage and human love. And again, he presented this to young people as a true vocation, and one that had evangelical and ecclesial fruitfulness. So the idea that the family, married couple and the family, played a role in the church, and that they benefited and blessed the church. So I think the final thing, I have a quote there from Gaudium et Spes, which Pope John Paul II himself quoted in one of his messages to the young people, which I think summarizes his influence amongst young people. It says, "We can justly consider that the future of humanity lies in the hands of those who are strong enough to provide coming generations with reasons for living and hoping." And I would say that Pope John Paul II provided for young people a very healthy Christian optimism to look towards the future with hope, that responding to the call of Christ, while it is something difficult, is indeed something possible, and something which Christ had confidence in the young people that they could respond, and also the Pope had confidence in young people that they could respond. And therefore, I believe many young people did respond to the message of Blessed John Paul II. And I think that influence will be seen in the church for some time to come. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Father George or Father Jason? Any comments?
I had a question for Father George, and that was just to focus on, because you're a pastor, what you learned from John Paul II that you carried with you in your pastoral life. I mean, I guess the Pope is a universal pastor, so I just wanted to hear from you in your own ministry as a priest what his gift was.
His complete gift to what he was doing. When he was speaking to you, he concentrated totally on you. He was not distracted by something else. And saying that it is not that what I do is enough, was always going forward, always living in the future. So I take this as my guidelines, not to be minimalist, just to do what I can and just look to the future, you know, and be more proactive than reactive. So this is how I take his advice.
Yes, please.
Father Jason, would you mind telling us your personal vocation story?
Okay. I don't want to get too far off topic.
Perhaps you could respond to that last comment you made about how John, that you said young people responded to John Paul.
Yes.
Did you respond to John Paul?
Yes. I think my response, and again, as I said in my thing, I don't think... I think my response to John Paul II was more to the sense of universal call to holiness, which later, I guess, reached full fruitfulness in a calling to the priesthood. In the sense that I remember when I was, I think I was about 14 or 15, I read the parish library had a copy of Crossing the Threshold of Hope, which was a series of interviews with the Pope, and I started reading that, and I remember being very inspired by his, as I said here, his optimism and his sense that that the Christian life, while very challenging, was something that was possible, and that that young people indeed. Anyone could respond to it. I mean, not even necessarily young people. And so I think it was that inspired me to really want to serve Christ and serve the church. So, I mean, as far as the connection with Blessed John Paul II, that's what I would say.
Yes?
What is the average age of what the church considers youth? Because I heard Youth Day was actually, the young people that went there were actually older adults. Like, they, you know, like when I think of youth, I think of sort of the 16-year-olds to, say, the 20. And they said the average age there, somebody just told me that, was about, I would say, 24 to 34. So I'm sort of curious what age is the youth?
Well, I think the official age for World Youth Day is something like 18 to 35.
Okay, well, that's what I would think, actually. But I just heard that, and I just wondered, because they said the majority was about 30 to 35, and they didn't think that was sort of, you know, a typical age for youth. So I'm just sort of curious about that.
Are the youth getting older?
I think that is a reality, is the sense that in our society today is that youth is a much more extended period of time than what it would have been in the past, because people are they're in education longer and they're getting married later, they're beginning their careers and stuff later in life. So in a sense, youth has gotten older.
And I think that's very true, because in my generation, it, you know, many people are married. for answering that. It's, you know, it puts more of a realistic perspective on it.
Well, I just wanted to share something personal in response to that. I was 35 when I registered for World Youth Day, 2002. So I went as a youth.
He was 34 when he registered, but
okay.
The time he got there, he was 35.
Okay, yeah, something like that. But anyway, I went there as a youth. I actually think my employment is in youth retreat ministry. I really enjoy working with high school age youth, which is mostly what our retreat ministry involves. I think we do have a gap in our experience as a Canadian Catholic Church. There are people who are making very serious decisions about their lives in their early to late 20s up to early 30s. Not the same thing as working with people in their high school years at all. And I think that we actually need to think seriously about people in that age range. I can say that both my wife and myself, we had a wonderful opportunity through the Jesuits at that time in our early 20s to work as lay companions with them. I was with them for 2 years, and it was life-changing. That was after I graduated from university. So I really think there is something really important in your question. And also, maybe I'm going to say, by way of maybe a little criticism, a little confusion on the part of the Canadian organizers and hosts of World Youth Day, who is the target and why? And my criticism is, quite frankly, that younger people are easier to control. And it was easier to manage high school age people because we have a Catholic school system funded by the government in Ontario to get them together and to get them together to go to World Youth Day, which is a great opportunity for those who did. Don't get me wrong. In fact, we were able to send people as young as 16, which we as Canadians asked for. But I think we missed an opportunity in reaching out to young adults who are making very serious life decisions. And you think of that young man who came to Jesus, we don't know how old he was, but he was making some serious life decisions at that point, which in our culture tends to be more in the young adult age.
Yes. I'd like to ask, if I can, like a sort of a specific as well as a general question of our speakers and maybe also the future speakers today and also the people. If you know of instances of conversion of people that could be traced back to John Paul II, the reason I'm asking this is because I think it was Father Jason mentioned, or somebody mentioned an article by Raymond D'Souza. There's another writer who writes sometimes for the National Post, who is Ian Hunter, and he was a retired professor emeritus from the University of Western Ontario. And I remember one comment that he made a while back. I think this was in an anniversary of John Paul II's death, and he said that John Paul II was probably responsible for a great number of conversions to Catholicism. And of course, he's implying non-Catholics to Catholic. But I can personally say that it was responsible for my own conversion from a spectator Catholic to a Catholic, to a true believer, I guess you could say. And that started with his funeral. I found that I sat down and I was transfixed. I could not take my eyes off the television set. And then I discovered a little bit later, my wife was watching this. My wife's very devout, a woman she has been for many years during her marriage, and she'd been praying to everybody about John Paul II for my conversion. She had a dream, actually, where John Paul appeared in her dream and had me in his hands. And so I just wonder if there are other, if you know of any, I mean, of course you can't divulge everything, but do you know of instances where he was involved in personal conversion?
Other of you?
I can only speak of, I know in my trips to World Youth Day, I mean, I can see of particular youth who, I mean, as you might have said, went from being spectator Catholics to being more serious and more devout. But I don't know of anyone who converted from another religion or another Christian community to the Catholic Church.
Well, personally, I didn't hear the story, the specific stories. In general, yes, it's very true. It's probably thousands of people came back to the faith because of John Paul II. But I cannot tell, you know, specifically about somebody.
Actually, Father George, you know, that reminds me of something. You said that John Paul, at one point, you heard him say something, oh, reading the newspaper, sometimes they actually tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I remember hearing about John Paul in the media in particular, is that, oh, he was an actor, and, you know, he's great on stage, and this is how he captivates people, you know, that he just acts, and that it's kind of a show. But what was interesting about what you had to say was that when you met him individually, personally, you had that sense of his full attention. You didn't have the sense of him as an actor. Is that right?
Absolutely. That's right. That's right. And whatever was coming from him, it was from his life of prayer. That's... many don't know, but very often he was prostrating in the chapel, even in his bedroom, before he started, you know, his morning prayer. He was prostrating in prayer. So this was his way. When he got the note that he is nominated as a bishop, so his first reaction was he went to the chapel and spent about 5 hours on the floor. The sisters didn't know what to do. Just they were waiting with supper for him, and is he alive or he's dead? You know, didn't know what to do. And this was maybe not every day, I don't know, but practice. Very often he did that. So he was man of deep prayer, and whatever came out from him, it was from that spirit. Yes.
When Father says he was like a rock, well, that movie, and a very well done, typifies exactly that. He was like a rock. And for you to have seen that in person, that must have been just remarkable.
You know, there are like millions of people and thousands of people. When he came to the church, He kneeled down, and exactly, he became immediately like a rock. He had tremendous ability of concentration. Doesn't matter where he was, he concentrated and he was with God, because he was always with God. But he demonstrated, you know, that way, you know, that. And he was aware of what's going on. It's not that he was asleep. He had eyes closed, and when the time came, he was there.
Yes? Yes, please.
Further to what you said about coming to how many people were converted, and not the whole story, but I was up at the lake, and I came in to make lunch for everybody, and I turned on the television. And there was this man on the stage. And I guess I knew it was the Pope. I just really never paid much attention before. But I finished lunch, but I couldn't go to the trailer, and I was mesmerized. As I said, the way he spoke. And it was like what he said was the way he said it. And when I finally... events brought me around to talk to Father George. What really struck me is being acquainted again with John Paul II at a CWL retreat, and it was in the library, and I was asked if I would like to just come. And Father read poetry of John Paul, and I found it just spoke volumes to me. It was from the heart. It was, I think that's what it was. It's him. He wasn't an actor to me. He was just a personality that I would never meet face to face. But I felt a connection to the heart of what he was saying. Can I recite everything he said? No. but it was words that really penetrated, you know, like that splendor of truth. It was like, what is splendor of truth? What a way to put that. So what is truth? So part of that was part of my journey. And did he really make my conversion into Catholicism? I think it was a real big beginning. A real beginning. And other people have been touched by him, and I know that for a fact. And now I'm Catholic, and it was a tremendous moment to embrace the fullness of faith. And I'm still very touched by John Paul II.
Thank you for that.
So I apologize that I didn't know, say that I don't know anybody who converted. I didn't think about her, yes.
Anybody else? Any other comments? Yes, please.
I remember on World Youth Day, and in the newspaper, there was always an article about him, and there was this one picture of him this one day, and I was really taken with it, because his body was like he had Parkinson's real bad, and so he was really very weak, his body, you know, like he couldn't do nothing. But they captured in this one picture his eyes, like his spirit. You could just see the twinkle, the sparkle, in, like God in his eyes. And his body was like, you know, falling apart, but his spirit, you could see it in his eyes. So whenever I've ever heard him speak on TV or whatever, I've always noticed his spirit. Through his eyes. But to capture that in the picture was really amazing.
And I remember his trip to Holy Land, and when he was going to Golgotha, you know, there are a few steps there, and he was pulling himself, and the comment was that at that time, his spirit is pulling his body. And that's exactly how it was.
Yeah. You could see it.
Yes.
It's really amazing.
Yeah. And one of the of his personal secretaries, Mieczysław Mokrzycki, that Archbishop of Lwów, he was with him 9 years, last 9 years. And he was always with him. And at that time he was in his chair, you know, so he just moved the chair in, you know, to the table, you know, pushing him. And one day, John Paul II make a comment to him. Listen, if somebody was going to ask you what you're doing here, tell them that you pull out the Pope under the table. So he had always a sense of humor in any situation, and whatever he preached, he lived that, or he was inspired. He talked about suffering. He suffered. He talked about the old age. He was old. And he was talking about experiences from being under Nazi regime and under communist regime. So he was speaking from the experience. But that experience was transformed by prayer or... Yeah, I would say that, yes.
Well, thank you very much, Father Jason, Father George.